What would have been your earliest memory, I'm curious?
No, that's an extraordinary question. I'll tell you. I'd say one of my earliest memories. My father died in 1927. And I was in the dining room or whatever it was with my mother when my uncle arrived and told her that my father had died. That's probably one of my earliest memories.
But you would have only been 3 or 4.
I was about 3 and a half, yeah.
Wow. So it was left to your mother, because I think, was it 3 children?
3.
To rear you single-handed?
You know, in those days, there was no help for people like my mother, no.
Like, there would have been no system kick in then?
No, none. With regards absolutely to none.
Any kind of supplementary payments, nothing?
No, nothing. And my mother then became a dressmaker. And she was a very good one, actually, in the end. And she had a lot of very important clients who were great friends of hers.
Like whom? Did she do it for shops or for individuals?
No. Just private people. One was John Sisk, the elder, who formed the company of Sisk's Builders. His wife was a great friend of my mother's. And Fina, her daughter. And quite a number of others.
Enough to keep roof over your head and bread on the table.
She was a marvellous woman. Yeah.
I mean, she was ingenious as well, because she took lodgers in to supplement money coming into the house, didn't she?
You're right.
Yeah.
She did.
Yeah.
She did indeed.
Do you recall going to school, primary school?
My mother took me when I was about 7, I'd say. She was going to send me to primary school in the North Pond. And I remember the superior, whoever it was, said that it might be better to send him across to St. Vincent's, which was across the road from the North Pond at the time.
Yeah.
And I spent 1 year with the nuns. I can always remember the nun in charge, Sister Bruno.
Why wouldn't you forget her?
Yeah, she was a tough nut, I can tell you. And then I went through primary and secondary in the North Pond.
Were they tough years?
I'll be honest with you, Neil, I must have been in the middle of the roader, because I never had any trouble. But we had some very, very, what I would call, they were almost sadists.
Yeah.
One of the brothers was a terrible character.
Yeah.
I think he took a pleasure out of beating up boys. He never beat me up anyway.
You were one of the lucky ones.
I was lucky, yeah.
Yeah.
Those strange times.
After school, did you go to work then, or did you go to college?
No, I had to go to work.
You had to bring in the money.
I was very fortunate to get a job with the Dunlop Company.
Yes. You went on then to end up as MD of Dunlop's, isn't that right?
Well, I was the production director, yeah.
It's kind of an important job.
The top job in Cork.
So during that time, say, for instance, the 30s and onwards, there would have been a lot of worry over Hitler, wouldn't there? There was an issue regarding Ireland's neutrality. Was that all the talking point at the time?
Well, we were neutral on the side of the Allies. And I would say Winston Churchill had no love for us at all. Actually, one weekend, I was out with the LDF.
Did you sign up for the local defence force?
Oh, yeah.
Was that kind of like an army that was on standby in the event of things kicking off?
Well, it was local. Local, like.
Were you armed?
The only time we were issued with live bullets, except on the firing range now, where you would have them anyway, was this weekend when we thought we were going to be invaded by Germany or by Britain.
Was there a credible risk that Hitler would invade Ireland at the time?
Oh, yes, he would have invaded Ireland to get into Britain.
And this was the belief, and this was the worry.
Yeah.
When you were in working in Dunlop's, if I recall, there would have been Dunlop's and there would have been Ford's and there would have been Sunbeam and there would have been
Dwyer's. The three main ones.
Yeah, big companies like that employing thousands and thousands. You know, my mother worked in Dunlop's, for instance, and also worked
in
Sunbeam.
Did she really?
Oh, she did, yeah, in the boot factory. Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Would I have known her?
Eileen English. You, in Gardner's Hill, you may have known the Martins.
Oh, I did, of course.
Which would be Joe and Mary Martin.
I did, of course.
Well, Mary Martin is my aunt.
Is that so?
That's right. She would be my mother's sister. Both of them are past now, but...
Well, I made it my business. I knew an awful lot of the workers in the factory.
Why did you make it your business? There was thousands of them.
Well, I think it's important, you know. I mean, that you were part and parcel of the place.
You see, were you on first name terms with them?
I worked on the shop floor initially for 2.5 years.
You worked your way up then?
I did, yeah.
Wow. Did you go in as an operative and end up head of production?
I did, yeah.
That's some achievement, isn't it?
Well, I wouldn't regard it like that now, but I suppose I was fortunate, maybe.
How did you feel when Dunlop's closed, when Ford's closed, when Sunbeam closed, when Verome's closed?
I wasn't involved in the closure myself, personally. I was working in headquarters in the UK. But I'd say people of Cork thought it was the end of the world.
Why would you say that?
Because of so many people working. We had, at one time, we had almost 1,000 ladies working in the factory and 1,000 men. Ford's had nearly 1,000, 800 and something. And Sunbeam then had about 3,500 people. They had a lot of people, a lot of girls working. And, of course, Apple came along and, sure, I mean, they trebled the employment.
But there were dark days way before Apple came to Holyhill. I mean, well, there must have been dark days during the Second World War, the emergency after it, shortages.
Yeah. Oh, terrible shortages. Terrible shortages.
But people of that era and you must have had to have been very resilient. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
Very strong.
Yeah. Well,
to keep going.
There were. But mind you, the bread was almost black.
I heard that. Why was that? Shortage of wheat?
Well, you see, the bread made in Ireland came from flour milled in, I think, Canada. I could be wrong. And when the war came, we had to use our own flour. And, I mean, it was nothing as good as what was being imported, like.
But you ate what you were given.
Oh, yeah. There was no such thing as tea. There was no such thing as coffee. It was ersatz coffee. In other words, a made-up thing. My memory served me right. The coffee, I think it was coffee anyway, was made from roasted dandelion roots.
Somebody put the kettle on, we'd have a proper cup of coffee. God almighty.
That is true now.
And was your mum a good cook? Was she a good provider in that way?
Oh, she was fantastic. Fantastic.
I heard that neighbours were very kind as well. There was a real bond at the time, wasn't there?
Oh, fantastic. There were 14 houses on the terrace. Half were Protestant and half were Catholic, but it didn't make the slightest difference. If anybody was in trouble, everybody helped.
Great sense of community.
Terrific sense of community.
So tell me, when and where then did you meet the beautiful Pat?
Oh. Gosh, Neil. I'll tell you. A chap who married her elder sister asked me to go on a drive. We ended up in Gugan Barra. We went into Cronin's
The hotel?
Yeah.
And there she was?
For a meal. And it transpired. Somebody said it was Pat's 21st birthday. So that's the start of it.
So where did you get married?
We got married in 1955, is it? Yeah.
Was it a big wedding?
No, God, no.
They weren't usually big. They were breakfast weddings, weren't they?
This was a breakfast, a wedding breakfast. And down in Maryland.
And honeymoon, anything like that?
Honeymoon is right. My aunt, who lived in Liverpool, arranged for us to go on literally a pilgrimage to Lourdes. And we were using it as a holiday, obviously. And we spent a week in Lourdes.
And we Joe, that's the best honeymoon I've ever heard of. I've spoken to lots of honeymoon couples over the years, but never a pilgrimage to Lourdes.
Then we went to San Sebastian, which was lovely. God, you're dragging all sorts of things out of me.
103 years on this planet is an incredible achievement. You have seen huge changes from the formation of the state as a small little baby itself like you, yeah, all through the decades.
That's right.
Does it surprise you the amount of things you've seen, the amount of change?
I suppose some things do surprise. I mean, there's no doubt about it that communication changed dramatically. You know, now on your phone, you can speak to somebody in Australia. That's one. But I think one of the other things which has dramatically changed lifestyle is medical science. I mean, my father died when I was, what, three and a half, going on four. Yeah. I doubt if he'd have died today.
Are you aware of what he passed from?
I'm not really, I'll be honest with you.
But you would have been lucky to make 50 back then.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's it, yeah.
Did your mother live a good age?
She did, yeah. She was in her 80s, and she was a marvellous woman.
She must have been an awful loss, considering how hard she worked for the family.
Yeah, she was a marvellous woman, yeah. Yeah. And
did Pat live to a good age?
Pat, she was in her 80s too. She hadn't been well. She got Parkinson's.
I'm curious, was it hard for you to go on and adjust after her? It was hard for my father to go on after my mother passed away. He lived for another 20 years.
In Pat's case,
she was ill for a while.
She was, yeah. She was. So, like, you kind of got acclimatized to
ready.
It, if I might use that expression. Yeah.
But here you are. At 103. Are you still out and about?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. When people reach a ripe age, they're always asked, you know, what's the secret to a long life?
I wouldn't have any idea what it is. I think it is an act of good fortune.
Luck, is it not? A healthy diet or a hot toddy going to bed at night or
don't smoke? I was a very heavy smoker at one time.
Were you now?
Yeah, but I stopped smoking in my, I suppose, early 40s, I'd imagine. And I never smoked. My wife said it, that the doctor had come and was I still smoking and would I give them up? And I said to her, I will.
Well, I tell you something. If there's any good advice to somebody who's a smoker, it's to give up fags in your 40s. You'll live to 103.
Yeah. Yeah.
And probably a lot longer. You're in great shape.
Well, look, I wouldn't count my chickens. I'm obviously take things easy. I don't, as I say, I like a glass of wine with my dinner.
Dead right.
And
do you cook?
Huh?
Do you cook?
No, not anymore. I was a good cook.
Yeah.
I did Doreena's court, well, by accident.
You went to Ballymaloe?
Yes. My wife, Pat, said to me, Joe, I'd love to do Doreena's course. So I said, no problem, Pat. I'll drive you down. We went down the first night, which was quite early, around six, and she had coffee and cakes and everything out ready. And there were 20 ladies on the course. Doreen said to me, "What would you be doing sitting out in the car?" I didn't know how long this was going to take, an hour maybe or what. "Why don't you join the course?" So I said, okay. So I paid my fee, and it went on till 11:30.
Did you learn anything?
Oh, I did. I did. I enjoyed it. I really did.
So did you have any specialty in the kitchen then that you were renowned for by the family?
I used to make all the marmalade for the family. Three fruit.
That might catch on. What else do you put in marmalade besides oranges? Limes, maybe?
No. Two grapefruit, two oranges, big ones, and four lemons.
There you go. My mouth is watering
at
the prospect.
I always used the imperial measure.
Do you have faith?
Yes, very strong.
Yeah? Mm. Believe in heaven?
Hmm?
Heaven?
Oh, I do, yeah.
Do you believe you'll be with Pat again?
Oh, I do.
Does that give you comfort?
It does. And I'd say she's ahead of me, like, you know.
You know, at the 103 years of experience that you've had in life, and you look at Ireland now, and you look at the formation of the state and the limited resources and the poverty and the hardship that everybody came through all through those decades, our parents and our grandparents behind them. You look at Ireland now with, you know, housing shortages and rents out of control and all sorts of issues impacting on people's way of life. What do you make of Ireland?
I think the Irish Free State, if I might use that expression, as it was called initially, has done remarkably well. And we stayed out of the war. De Valera negotiated the return of the ports, which made a huge difference. We'd be stuck in the war if there was an army in the ports. And I feel myself that the country is not in a bad place at all.
In spite of the fact that there are generations who can't afford a home or afford the rent of an apartment?
But that's not new.
No?
That was always the case.
Okay.
We're no different to anybody else in that sense. I feel myself anyway that Ireland has been well governed by various people, not any one party.
We haven't done too bad.
I don't think we've done badly at all.
Well, I have to say, Joe, it's been a pleasure visiting with you and having an opportunity to listen to you reflect and recollect your long life. May you live even longer and prosper. It's lovely chatting with you.
As I say, there's a first time for everything and a first time to meet you, Neil.
Well, it's been my pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you very much.